Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 90 in the series entitled The Endless Struggle, What's the Point? Chapter 35. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 9th of Adar 1, 5760.
Good evening. We're up to the 35th chapter, Perek Lamed Hei. I want to welcome myself and everybody to the new location. Mashana Makay, Mashana Mazel, L'Teva V'Levracha, and all of the new faces that are here. The only issue I have is there was once a rabbi who was giving a sermon, and he knew when to begin, but he didn't know when to end, as is the custom of many a rabbi. So he continued and continued and continued on, and finally the crowd began to evacuate the center of the shul. You know, vifel is hashir, how much patience can you have? One person leaves, another person leaves, another person leaves. Till every single person left, save one individual who stuck through the entire speech and remained there till the end. Finally, when the rabbi concluded, he runs over to the man and he says, "You know, I want to thank you so much for sticking it out with me, and I want to apologize to you for going for so long, but what should I do? There was no clock on the wall." So the man says, "There was no clock on the wall, but there was a calendar on the wall." I see there's no clock on the wall here. Come and gain, and gain. And no calendar either, right? So we're up to Perek Lamed Hei, as mentioned, the 35th chapter. As I mentioned last week, the 35th chapter in many ways begins a second section within the first section of Tanya. The first section of Tanya consists of 53 chapters. And in a certain way, one can state that chapter 35, the Alter Rebbe, the author, embarks on discussing, analyzing, and illuminating new concepts and new issues that will continue beginning with 35 until the end of Likutei Amarim, the first section, chapter 53. So let's begin Perek Lamed Hei. V'hine, that is page 86 of Mem Gimel Lamed Beis. V'hine, l'teis v'zbir tevis la'saisai, to elucidate still further. The word, the term that the Torah uses, la'saisai, that you may do it. As mentioned many of times, the Alter Rebbe writes it on the title page of the Tanya that this book is based and is based upon the pasuk, the verse in Parshas Nitzavim, where Moshe Rabbeinu, during the end of his life, at the end of his life, communicates to the Jewish people that the Torah, the mitzvahs, Yiddishkeit, is not across the sea, it's not in heaven. Rather, ki karoy ve'lecha davar miyoid, this thing, this matter of Torah and mitzvahs is extremely close to you, it's karoy ve'lecha, and he continues, beficha, in your mouth, ubulvavcha, and in your heart, la'asayse, that you may do it, that you may perform it. Zogt Alter Rebbe in the title page that he comes in this sefer to explain Eichu Karav Ma'id, how indeed Yiddishkeit is very close, because indeed this statement poses, has always posed, until Mashiach comes, will pose a great difficulty, both on a functional level and on an emotional level. Both on a functional level, indeed, to live our life that's absolutely and unequivocally in sync with the expectation and demands of Torah in thought and speech and action, it sometimes seems as an abstract ideal, not feasible to the average, normal, ordinary human being. Certainly on an emotional level, to say that Yiddishkeit is karav elecha, it's close to you, it's intimately close to you, it's relevant to you, belevavcha, emotionally, sometimes and very often one may ask that it doesn't seem that's the case. It doesn't seem that the natural I, my natural identity, disposition, consciousness, and personality gravitates and embraces the ideals, the beliefs, the system of Torah and mitzvahs. On the contrary, sometimes we can perceive mitzvahs or Torah and the lifestyle of Yiddishkeit as a burden, as a superimposed doctrine that alienates us from our natural emotions and our natural personality. Moshe Rabbeinu comes along and says, no, karev elecha, you can truly celebrate it, embrace it emotionally. The I, the personality of the person, can become permeated with it and state that it's really close to me, it's close to my heart. So the Alter Rebbe explained at length that in order to understand this, we must realize that the Jew possesses two components to his life, two consciousnesses. One, the ego, and one is the soul. The id and the yid. Or as the Alter Rebbe put it, two spirits. Two souls. One is an animalistic spirit, which basically the focus of that spirit, of that consciousness, is on the ego, the I. The I is what stands at the core of that soul. All of her cravings, ambitions, and drives are centered around satiating, satisfying, protecting the self and the ego. But then, and that is a very true part of us, the id, but beyond that, we all possess a deeper component, which is truer and deeper, the divine spirit, the transcendental soul, that is interested in real meaning, that seeks to go beyond the ego, to go beyond the self, and she finds herself only when she connects with honesty, with spirituality, with absolute energy, with eternity, with the truth of life and of existence. So what the Alter Rebbe is saying is that notwithstanding the id soul, the egotistical, biological, animalistic soul, beyond that, a Jew has a soul, and in that soul's life, godliness is extremely relevant and extremely intimate. The sublime, the reality of the sublime, of the spiritual, of the transcendental, is bread and butter for the soul. Despite the fact that there is a struggle and there's a combat between the two consciousnesses, each one wants to pervade our life, our inner space and our outer space, which means our inner mind and emotions, as well as our behavior, our day-to-day behavior. Each soul wants to dominate the Jew's life. Nevertheless, a Jew can always identify within himself or herself the divine soul and relate to it. And when you come in contact with that soul, you realize the kikara veilecha, because it's indeed part and parcel of your existence. Our soul needs transcendence. It needs meaning. It needs honesty. It needs spirituality. That is the nature of its chemistry. But that doesn't mean that we get rid of the animal soul. We don't get rid of the animal soul. We never get rid of the animal soul, at least most Jews. I see you're nodding very firmly. And what's dormant? Halavai. Halavai. Now, does this mean that karav eilecha b'levavcha, that you can always feel it? The battle means that on an active conscious level, the animal soul is as powerful as the divine soul, and in our conscious hearts, we sometimes feel the ambitions, the cravings, and the personality exclusively of the animal soul. So the Alter Rebbe said, true, but the bottom line of kikarav eilecha, the ultimate focus and emphasis in the pasuk is on the word la'asaisai. Doing, behaving. And that the person is always capable of, to behave from moment to moment and day to day, month to month, and so forth, in a fashion that is absolutely consistent with the persona of the divine soul, because notwithstanding any type of craving, urge, impulse, lust, as awesome and as powerful as it may seem, the mind rules over the heart. Mayach Shalat al Alev was a fundamental doctrine of the Alter Rebbe. And as a result of your mind, you can always tap in to the vision and to the personality and to the character of the divine soul. And it's not just Karev, it's Karev Ma'id, which means the divine soul is always accessible and very accessible. The pasuk says ki karav elecha adavar moed beficha uvel vavcha, which means it can be Yiddishkeit, spirituality, godliness can be intimate, close to you in your heart, that you always feel it, you constantly celebrate it. So the Alter Rebbe said that there's two types of belavavchas. There's two types of emotions. There's what we call, what he called in chapter 16, in a brilliant analysis, emotional emotions and practical emotions. There is, for example, in love, there is emotional love and there's practical love. Emotional love would mean that you are, your heart is experiencing a powerful bren, an enthusiastic, fiery passion of affection towards somebody or something and so forth, which motivates and inspires you and drives you to certain behavior. But not everyone is capable of that constantly. And as I mentioned then, if your wife asks you to go out and buy a bottle of milk and some bread, it's not necessarily the 24 hours a day you're experiencing a fiery emotion towards this human being, and therefore when she requests from you something, automatically you go running to purchase it. Because you can do something with a person that you love so much. We human beings, particularly men in this issue, operate in a complex fashion. And sometimes you don't have that emotional love and you're absolutely not in the mood of it. But nevertheless, there is another love, and that's called practical love. Which is, as the Alter Rebbe put it, an intellectual emotion. An awareness that I should be having this emotion. A feeling that I want to have a feeling, even though I don't have a feeling. A certain conviction that contains an emotion within it, similar to a parent, to a mother, that is carrying within it a child that is still concealed and inconspicuous, as the metaphor he gave. And that is very significant and very powerful, in as much that it can drive you to a certain behavior equal to an emotional emotion. So the Alter Rebbe says, Ki karev elecha adaber moid beficha uvilavavcha la'asaisai. What type of belavavcha does the Torah primarily expect from the Jew? Is that type of belavavcha, that type of emotion that leads you to la'asaisai. And that emotion you're always capable of, because as awesome and as powerful the animal soul is making itself meshuga in your psyche, the mind is always in your domain. In the average person, there is an exception, a person whose brain is fried, heaven forbid, as a result of substances which the Alter Rebbe discusses in chapter 17, or as a result of excessive sin that desensitizes even our minds and then you lose control over your life. But that's an exception. It's an exception, but in the life of the ordinary human being, the mind is always accessible. And the mind can always produce a proclivity, an inclination to behave a certain way. And thus the pasuk says, "Beficha uvilvavcha nat vila asaisai," in your mouth and in your heart, and to do it. Uvilvavcha la asaisai. The la asaisai is a qualification that defines the expectation of belavavcha. What type of belavavcha do we want? A belavavcha that leads to la asaisai, and that you're always capable of. Notwithstanding the turmoil that goes on in our emotions at times. Sometimes I can be celebrating my godly soul, and other times my animal soul is the exclusive voice in my emotions. But the belavavcha la asaisai, I'm always capable. This was the theme of chapter 17 primarily, and thus the Alter Rebbe highlighted and emphasized very much the power of la'asaisai, behavior. And that's karev elecha. And thus, the hero of the Tanya has been the Beinoni, not the tzaddik, whom often the tzaddik is translated as the righteous man. According to the Tanya's definition of the tzaddik, it's a wrong translation, even though I too used it. The tzaddik in Tanya is the superman. The Russian Tanya is not a wicked man. The Russia of Tanya is not wicked. The Russia of Tanya has to be translated as the weak man, and the Beinoni, I believe, as the possible man. So you have the superman, the weak man, and the possible man. The Beinoni is not the average hoshmo that's walking down the street. The Beinoni is the possible man. The Beinoni is the ideal of the ordinary human being. But of the ordinary human being. So the tzaddik is not the Alter Rebbe's hero. He's a superman who, the exclusive voice that pervades his or her entire space, outer and inner space, is the divine soul. The yearning for transcendence, for truth, for honesty, for the essence. That's the tzaddik. The Russia is certainly not the hero of the Tanya. It's the weak man who succumbs to the mask and to the cover-up and to the hollow temptation and glittering veneer that the animal soul represents. Rather, it's the Beinoni who operates in a duality, who operates on two levels of consciousness. Seeking meaning and transcendence, and also seeking self-centeredness and selfishness and earthiness and sometimes stupidity and rubbishness and coarseness and all type of vulgarity. The tzaddik doesn't get turned on by the world. The Beinoni does get turned on by the world. Negativity is appealing to him. He lives with klipa, he lives with the cover-up, but nevertheless doesn't allow the self-centered consciousness, the id, to control his life. He knows, he identifies the source of the cravings and of that consciousness, and he knows how to control it and keep it in its space. He doesn't allow it to control his life, his behavioral life, which means thought, speech, and action, is an expression of the divine soul. As a continuation to all of this, which has been elaborated at length and discussed quite at length in all of the earlier chapters of Tanya, till 35. The Alter Rebbe continues to discuss what is really the significance of La Saisa. What is truly the meaning and the goal and the purpose of the last seisi, of the big, of a behavioral godly life, which will also clarify to us something that he has not addressed till now. What is the real purpose and destiny of the Beinoni? Of the man called the Beinoni? What is the real purpose of his creation? Because only through understanding the significance of La'asaisai, which is the true contribution of the Beinoni to spirituality, that is his contribution, behavior, that's his ultimate contribution. Nothing beyond that, in the ultimate sense of the word. Maybe momentarily he might experience an ecstatic spiritual high emotionally by davening and so forth, as discussed in 12 and 13. But when we can understand the last seisi, we can understand what is the real purpose of the Beinoni. And now we'll continue inside. Okay, let's begin again. V'hine, l'tais v'zbir tevis last seisi. To elucidate still further the term last seisi in that pasuk, that you may do it. V'gam lohavin ma'at mize'eh. Tachlus b'riyas ha'beinonim. And let us also understand, at least in a very small measure, the purpose in creating Beinonim, Tachlus Briyas HaBeinonim. Why Hashem created Beinonim? Because as explained earlier in Tanya in chapter 14 and 27, most Jewish souls were created to remain Beinonim. Most Jews do not have the capacity, even through effort, to attain the level of a tzaddik, where you totally rid yourself from the mask-like consciousness, where you totally rid yourself from your ego. Most souls were created with the ability, with the potential to develop themselves into Beinonim, and are incapable of rising to the next level. That's why Eve said, Barasa tzaddikim, you have created tzaddikim, which doesn't contradict the doctrine of free choice, as the Alter Rebbe explained in 14, because you have created certain souls with the ability of becoming tzaddikim, and other souls, barasar, shayim, you created most Jews and most human beings with the continuous struggle similar to the Russia, which is the definition of the inner space of the Beinoni, which can be identical with the Russia, with the weak man, and so forth. So to understand the purpose of the Briyas HaBeinonim, the Yiridas Nishmaseyem Lo'olam Haza, and the purpose of their souls descend to this world, L'Islabich B'Nefesh HaBahamas Shemak L'Bevisitra Achir, being to enclose itself within an animal soul, which is deriving its identity and energy from the Klipa, from the cover-up, and from Sitra Achir, the other side, the very antithesis of the divine soul. May Achir Shalayuchlu L'Shalcha Kol Yemeyim. Since they will not be able to banish the animal soul throughout their entire lives, Kol Yemeyim, from day with the first day till the last day of their lives, they will not be able to send away the animal soul. V'Litchoysam Im Kaima Michal Asmali Shabalef. Nor even dislodge it from its place in the left ventricle of the heart, which, as he explained in chapter 9, that is the primary physiological location that is connected to the blood and to the self-orientation, representing the animal soul enclosed in the blood. So this human being doesn't dislodge it from its place. Shalayalu mimeni rurim lamayach. So that no negative imaginations rise from it to the mind, he never experiences a state of tranquility where the animal soul is totally removed from him, where the animal soul is dislodged from its place. Not even where the animal soul ceases to affect his mind, that its cravings do not produce instinctive thoughts and imaginations and lusts and various thoughts in the mind that gravitate towards negativity and unhealthy behavior. Because in the Beinoni, the essence of the animal soul, which is derived from Klipa, and he keeps on emphasizing that it's from Klipa, which means a cover-up. It covers up truth. It covers up honesty. It covers up the true rhythm of life. So the essence of that animal soul, he betakva b'gvurasa etzlam keteldasa, remains by the Beinonim in its full strength and potency, just as at birth. Except that its garments, which means its forms of expression, in thought, speech, and action, they do not clothe themselves in the body of the Beinonim, as mentioned above in the earlier chapters, in chapter 12 and so forth. The Alter Rebbe explained that the uniqueness of the Beinoni of the possible man is that he doesn't allow the animal soul to materialize itself, to express its ideals, or its moods, its cravings, its ambitions, its philosophies, in his body, which means in his actions, in his deeds, in his behavior, in his words, and in his thoughts. But its essence, its personality, its cravings, its impulses, its urges, its lusts, and so on and so forth, they are not changed, they're not transformed, they're not metamorphosized. They exist in a powerful way. They don't dominate his life. They don't find expression. They don't come to fruition in his life. And this affects his mind, even though the source of the animal soul is in the heart. Because the Beinoni can control his conscious thoughts, but never his instinctive thoughts. There are conscious thoughts. Once I experience a certain thought instinctively, I now have control if I should continue embracing the thought, indulging it, succumbing to it, allowing it to lead me to action or not. So when the Beinoni experiences an unhealthy craving or impulse, he knows right away this is coming from the animal soul, he dismisses it, he smacks it in the face, and he goes on. But not to experience any unhealthy, negative, immoral, ugly, dark, gloomy thoughts, that he's incapable of, because instinctive thoughts are a natural reflection of emotions. Everything in the human psyche is experienced in and through the brain. So the very existence of the animal soul, with all of its cravings and the bane in his life, produces instinctive thoughts on a continuous basis. He must struggle not to allow these thoughts to continue, to develop, to build momentum, which is usually where the problem begins. The thought enters into your mind, something unhealthy, ugly, dark, whatever it may be, every person according to his own or her own animal soul and so forth. And what happens is that sometimes we're weak. We don't create a stop sign and interrupt it. That, you have a choice. You can interrupt any thought that comes into your mind. So, the Alter Rebbe said, but that not to have any thoughts, that the Beinoni is incapable of. And the battle has to continuously go on against this element. So the Alter Rebbe says, V'im kein, if this is the case, and listen to his words, La maze yardu nishmai seyem la'ilam hazah. Why then did their souls descend to this world? Ligalarikas v'shalom, to strive in vain, God forbid. Lilachim kal yemeim imayetzer, waging war all the days of their life against their evil inclination. V'layachlulai, but they are never able to vanquish it. Nothing happens. There was once a Jew. They tell the story of a Jew who was a productive member of society, a good human being, a hard-working human being, a moral person. He was thrown into prison, to a dark cell, dungeon, given a 10-year prison sentence. The cell was very small, containing only the utmost necessity for a human being to survive. He was given a little food every day, some water and so forth. Didn't have a window to the outside. So it was extremely depressing and horrible and miserable to be there and to end up in such a place, obviously. He realized that in the corner of the room there was a wheel. So he asked the guard, what is this crank attached to? What turns? So the guard told him that outside there is a mill. This crank is attached to a mill. And when you turn it, the mill turns. He says, what's the purpose of this? He says, you can mill things. You can mill grain. So he asked him if he could put in grain every single day, and he will mill it, and will produce flour, and then use the flour to bake bread. And the guard said, of course. So this Jew gave this gave the person, the Jew, something to do. And even though it wasn't exactly the work that he enjoyed, but nevertheless, something it is, productivity it is. And he devoted, he would wake up in the morning, he would pray, and then he devoted 6 hours a day turning the wheel, turning the crank for hours and hours. And whenever he would get depressed and bored and exhausted, he would imagine the outcome of his work. He would imagine the grain being grinded and developed into flour, and the flour being kneaded with water, and then it being baked into bread. And he imagined the bread being taken to various bakeries and stores and being purchased by families. And he imagined mothers and fathers and their children sitting around the table and partaking in the bread, all due to his very powerful toil for such a long time in such horrific circumstances. And this imbued him with vigor, with stimulation, with motivation, with some type of inspiration. He finished his 10 years, and he was told that he's free, and he went out of the prison. And the first thing, he ran around to see the work that he has been involved for 10 years. And as he approached it, he fainted. He saw that the crank was attached to nothing. It was attached to nothing. If you examine Alter Rebbe's words, this is what's paining him in the life of the Beinoni. The tzaddik, the superman, his soul comes down into the world. Godliness, transcendence, is the life of the soul. It comes into this world. It revolutionizes his entire space. He transforms his animal soul. He revolutionizes his nefesh habahamis. And he becomes godly, absolutely, within and without, and so forth. The Beinoni is never healed. Nothing the Alter Rebbe told us in Tanya, or nothing anyone will say, will ever really bring complete healing, serenity to the Beinoni. The Alter Rebbe gives the Beinoni advice how to lessen the pain, how to deal with the pain. But the tension between a life of meaning and a life of emptiness, between a life of transcendence and a life of earthiness, between happiness and depression, between frustration and depression, between ugliness and beauty, between the black and the white, always remains. As long as he works and he toils, the cravings, the urges, the impulses remain. And those of us who work on ourselves, and you're involved in growing spiritually, you know that you can work for 10 years, if you can work for a year, and for 10 years, and for 20 years, and then one nice morning you'll see that the animal soul is there in its full intensity. Godliness never becomes the vivid reality in the Beinoni's life. And you know what it sometimes feels, even when you're a Beinoni? Exactly like he felt. It's almost like you're put in front of a brick wall, and you know that God is on the other side, and you're constantly punching that wall, and it never gets breached. The clarity, the translucent element that characterizes the Tzaddik's life doesn't exist in the Beinoni's life. He sometimes feels his animal soul. He's sometimes inspired and enthusiastic. But then a few hours pass, or the next day passes, and the animal soul comes glaring at him, and it's all of its intensity, and sometimes a lot of ugliness and blackness. And it goes on and on. And it's like an onion, the Beinoni's life. You peel one layer, there's another layer of problems. You peel another layer, there's another layer. It just changes. Obviously, you become more refined and so forth, but there are always layers and layers. The true Beinoni doesn't have a moment of real rest, of real tranquility. To keep his conscience clear in this world is so hard for him. Not to lose his integrity requires constant tension and toil. There were people who their whole life, they walked the straight path. And then at one moment of weakness, at one moment of letting go, they discovered in their psyche darkness that they thought existed only in Rishayim.